Hello, welcome everyone for another episode of Let's Learn C Sharp with Scott and Sharita at Microsoft Reactor. If this is your first time joining us, we did have two prior sessions that are now available on our YouTube channel. They'll also be posted into the link momentarily. And if this is your third session with us, welcome back. At this time, I'm going to have Scott and Sharita pop on and begin. Let's get
Hello,
started.
hello.
I
Day
was given a
three.
short one because since it's the last day, I wanted to make sure you had time for everything.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, day three.
Day
Cool.
three.
I'm gonna get the I'll get the YouTube and I'll tweet this because I want to have a big strong finish today, Sharita, on our day
Let's
three of
do
learning.
it.
Okay. So when last you left our heroes 2 days ago, we went to .NET. Microsoft.com. Let's go ahead and bring up my screen here. Pop up the screen share real quick. One moment. Rebecca, could you do that for me? Pause for effect. There we go. You go to .NET. Microsoft.com/learn-to-code. We installed the developer tools, and what we actually installed was a thing that's called the .NET Coding Pack. Visual Studio Code, notebooks, some extra herbs and spices. And what we're working through right now is this C Sharp 101 notebook right here. So that is right here. And we were somewhere in the middle of that notebook yesterday. We talked about data types and casting. We did some cool things with ifs and elses. We noticed that sometimes these block openers, these braces matter, and sometimes they don't. Had an interesting discussion about whether or not they belong lined up or whether they belong at the end of the line. And sometimes they don't even matter, which is super interesting. But I think what's really fun about what we did yesterday, Sharita, was that we explored, and in both of us, yourself a TypeScript programmer, myself a C Sharp programmer, we're like, I don't know if it does work like that or not. So we tried it. We asserted our assumptions. We looked at our guesses and we're like, oh, okay, maybe it does work like that. Oh, maybe it doesn't work like that. And I learned a lot yesterday. I felt pretty good about it.
Yeah, so did I. So did I.
Yeah. Doesn't always work the way you think it does, but it should be pretty deterministic and it should work the same way every time. So let's see where we were here. We were messing around. I think we spent most of our time at the end of yesterday doing this here,
Yep.
looking at the number of seconds of now and looking at whether or not that seconds was even. And then we were just getting ready before we ran out of time to talk about how ifs and elses can get really complicated. This is a pretty chaotic looking thing here. If this, else, 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 else. This final else is kind of the when all else fails, else.
Yep.
Right? If none of that is true, we drop down into this else here. And then a little farther down, we saw we could do things like yesterday we made an you suggested an is even. And we made a function. Here we've got another example, multiple of three. These can be named any way that you want. This example just says I return yes or no, true or false, a Boolean. And here's my name. And this function can use the other functions. We could use display and whatnot. And then we talked about how this is an expression.
Yep.
And you don't have to say return if, you just return the expression. And that right there evaluates to true or evaluates to false. And then this is interesting. Here we can use that inside of another expression. I can ask questions. If it's even and here's your and. It's a multiple of three. So these ifs and ands can get pretty complicated pretty quickly, and then you have to decide, we have to decide whether it's going to be readable or not. Like maybe this would be more readable if it said if is even and multiple of three, right? That'd be cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, one of the folks on our chat earlier in our comments yesterday was making the comment that order of evaluation, like the order that these things happen, is important. This is a little bit detailed, but depending, you know, every language is a little different, but here's an or. Here's an or rather than an and. So you say if seconds is divisible by 2 or it's a multiple of 3. If this is true, we don't need to check the second thing because we only need one thing to be true. And this is a really interesting side effect, right? It's called short circuit evaluation. It's like, you know, like if you're over 18 and you're over 21, well, you're over 18, like you're cool. So come into the club.
Yeah.
If you're divisible by 2, we don't even bother looking at the second one here. So these ifs and ands can be really interesting. If you don't need the second one to be true, you short circuit and you're like, no, you're good. I saw your ID come into the club. Now, switch statements are very powerful, but a really great example of a thing that a lot of people get confused about. A lot of people don't like switch statements and they get pretty hairy and they can be abused. I'm sure you've probably inherited some code that you didn't write that had some switch statements that will make your eyes bleed.
Many. Yeah.
What is it about switch statements that people want to abuse them?
I don't know. Maybe because it's the readability, maybe because there are more words versus.
Yep. That's a good point. Yeah. They're not terse. They look like big old paragraphs, but somehow we keep finding ourselves into situations where it's like, you have to scroll and it's like, wow, I have to fit. Look at this. Look how big that is. But I get what they're doing though. You know, like how else could you make this cleaner? But it just, sometimes switch statements are a lot. So with a switch statement here, we're going to say, what's the day of the week? Remember before we took seconds. Here we're going to say day of the week. And then we say switch, which day of the week? Is it the case that it's Monday? Do some stuff. And then break out. Now I have this song from the 80s, break out in my head. If it's the case that it's Tuesday, do something and break out. If you don't have this break, if this break isn't here, then it'll fall. It'll keep going. It'll keep falling down, 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 down. So you have to decide if you want to break out or not. It wouldn't be a big deal with these cases because it can't be Monday and Tuesday at the same time. But you could have a thing be like, if it's the case that it's greater than 2, and it could be the case that it's greater than 2, and it's greater than 3, and it's greater than 4, and multiple case statements could be the case. It's the case that all these things are true. So you got to be intentional about, are we going to break out of our case? And these indentations, the fact that it's kind of indented, it doesn't matter. Remember, we saw yesterday that the white space doesn't matter. But it's nice to be intentional about lining these things up. So people kind of like to make their switch statements kind of look like this. And it makes it a little easier to read.
Yeah, for sure. It looks clean, too.
Yeah, it does look clean. Now, here's a nice one. Here's an example of exactly what I just talked about. What's going on here? Switch on the day of the week. If it's the case that any of these things are true, we got all these are, these can all be, oops, I need to work on my screen drawing. If it's the case that any of these are true, or the case that it's Friday before work ended, right? Here we're saying before, I think this means 16, so this must mean 4 o'clock, like 24 hour time.
Okay, got it.
That's what I'm thinking here. So it's before four, then we're going to work. And this could be a big if statement, couldn't it? Right? If it's Monday,
yes,
or it's Tuesday, or it's Wednesday, or, and that would be pretty ridiculous looking. It would look pretty hairy. So I think this is a good example of a switch statement that is clearer than an if, but it does the same thing. Does the same thing, right? Now, Terry Andre is asking, let's talk about the format of the case. That's a good question here. Let's look at that. So when you are doing a switch, you're going to switch on a thing. Like here's a variable. It could be switching on I. It could be switching on day of the week. It could be switching on whatever. So Terry's question is, explain the format of the case. We've got a variable that we're going to like enter the switch statement, and it's going to decide, am I going to turn left? Am I going to turn right? Which of the cases are we going to look at? This here is the thing you want to check against. This can be another variable. It can be, in this case here, day of week is a variable that was already kind of hanging around waiting for us here. And we're just using that because day of week, we hover over the variable here, is actually a data type. Hang on, I'm going to sneeze.
Oh, bless you.
My. Excuse me. So day of week is a data type that we've never seen before. We've seen integers and we've seen string. The day of week is what's called an enumeration because there's 7 days in the week. And day of week is a variable type. And it's not that this is special, our friends in the chat and Terry. This is just a data type here. So let's pretend that day of the week was a string. We're going to pretend it was a string. Then this would just say Monday, Tuesday, right? Then we'd be looking at this string and we check this. But let's say that day of week was an integer, like 1 for Monday and 2 for Tuesday. Then it would look like this. So the reason that it looks like this with this dot is just because day of the week is a thing. And we can actually go up here and we'll just make some space and I'll just type day of week and press dot. And it's going to pop open. See? And that's the stuff that this enumeration, this enum, E-N-U-M, you can go and search for it for enum if you want. It has those things. So that's why that has that dot there. But that's not specific to cases. That's just how you would do things here. So it could be what any of those things. You could switch on any of those things. Okay? You wouldn't want to do this. You could go like this. You could say, turn it into a string. And then here would be one, Monday, right? But you don't. There's no reason to turn it into a string and then do a bunch of string comparisons. Good question. Thank you, Terry. See if I broke it. See if it's still working. Yep. Friday's almost here. So, for loops. This one right here, I would probably say when I learned programming back in the day, I stared at that. You probably don't do a lot of those in TypeScript, right? You do for each, probably more, I would think, right?
No, we still do them like this too. Mm-hmm.
You still do them like this too? This has been like this forever. So C is a language that came before C sharp, right?
And
before C++. It's like the Latin of C languages, right? It's the original. And they've been doing for loops like this for 50 years. And people get really stuck on these. And it might be worth kind of breaking this apart to make this real big and talk about this, because for loops can confuse a lot of folks. And I'm just going to make a little space here. We already know that the curly brace doesn't matter, so we just move that out of the way so we don't get stressed out. And here's the part that is the trick about for loops that no one talks about. They put it all on one line like this. But like philosophically, here's what's going on. No one ever breaks them up because you wouldn't do that because you want to, like you said, you like a nice clean line of code. That ternary operator we saw yesterday, I know you love that. There's a new variable called counter. We'll start out at 5. Here's the part that everybody goes south on. What's going on here is this is a implied if. It's an expression. Yep. Again. Yeah, that's the thing. You know what's up. Counter's 5. If it's the case that it's greater than 0, and if it's, while it's still doing that, we'll keep going. Otherwise, break out.
Yep.
And then here we're saying counter equals counter minus 3. but we're doing it with that shorter deal right there. A lot of times we'll see something like this, bar I equals 1, I is less than 5, and then they'll go I plus plus.
Yep.
Right, and that's kind of the one we all learn on right there, and then we'll go display I. See if I broke it. There you go. There's our 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's our I right here. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I always get stuck here. You know, the old joke about programming is that somebody said that there's three things about programming that are hard. Three things. Naming stuff.
Okay.
And off by one errors.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with that.
Three things.
What's the thing? Uh-huh.
And off by one errors. It's a programming joke. I'm off by one. I counted two instead of three. See, every programmer joke is a groaner. You know what's up. Every
that's hilarious.
That's like a programmer dad joke. Yeah.
But don't.
Don't you always have a situation where like, okay, I'm going to show a number from 1 to 5. Cool. All right. Let's go, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4. And then you kind of like figure out it's off by one. It's always, oh, I should have started at 0, or, oh, I should have started at whatever.
Or make
let's
it
go
equal
from 0 to 5, right? 0 to 5.
Okay.
I'm going to delete this. We'll play that. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Boo.
Okay. So then I got to figure out there's multiple ways to solve this. I can go like this. And then I could say, well, I want to go I less than or equals to 5.
Mm-hmm. That'll get you right? 5.
Or, and then this is stylistic. It doesn't matter. Less than 6. It's going to get you the same result. It's going to get you the same result. But I think that's pretty clear.
That's, I like that too. Mm-hmm.
But for the newbies, for our friends on the show here who are maybe just getting started, this is definitely where your off by one error is going to happen. Whenever you're spinning through a million of something, oh, I did 1,000,001. Oh, I did 999,000. These are the problems that happen. Okay. But the thing to remember about for loops in C sharp or any C language, JavaScript, whatever, it's really doing this. It's breaking apart into three. Set up, ask the question, and then do the thing after you're done.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. And this is our opportunity. This is our moment to stop. That's our moment to get out of there. All right. So for loops are great. For loops can get pretty hairy. Here's something that took me a while to figure out because I just said that's our chance to get out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless I decide to bail and make my own exit.
Mm. Yes.
Remember that break we did in the switch statement? It's explicit. It's like, nope, I've got another case that I'm going to use that I'm going to jump out. So I'm going to break explicit. I'm going to make my own exit. I don't care what's going on here. Something happened in the middle and I want to get out. So right here, we've got a counter. That's going to go forever. That's another thing that happens in programming, isn't it? You make a loop and then it's like, I can't get out. It's going to happen forever.
Mm-hmm.
This will happen while this is greater than 0, which will be forever because it's just going to keep getting bigger. So this person's going and saying, all right, if it's greater than 10, then I'll leave. They could have put that 10 up here, but they decided to make their own exit down here. Because you never know. Something might happen. Could be an error. Things could break and you got to bail. But the result is still the same. Okay. Now, these are the loops. I love my for each loops.
Mm.
I just think it's easier to read. When for each loops came out, I just thought that for each was just the greatest thing ever. Because this is where when programming feels like language, like English, you know, for each name in array of names. I like that.
I guess. I don't think I've ever really been a fan.
Really? Okay. Well, that's good. Let's compare.
Maybe you can change my mind, though, right now. So
I appreciate that. Well, this is where we have, you know, different opinions. Because yesterday we were talking about how the ternary operator, the ternary operators when you say, like, you know, if something true, colon, false. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, I don't know, that feels weird. That feels weird. Mm-hmm. And you were like, oh, that's great. I love it. Everybody's got their own style, their own style. Terry's asking if we can put a display in the for loop to check. Absolutely. Yes. So any of these loops, you can put in displays. You can put in, here's a display in the middle of a for loop. You can absolutely check on those things. When we see a little bit later, we can do interactive debugging where we can actually stop the program and put our finger on that and check. But yes, you can do whatever you want in the for loop. For loop can get really complicated. Now, for each loops, which we're still on the fence, Sharita's still on the fence about whether she likes this or not, and take something that is, and this is a weird long word, enumerable. I think that adults hear words like this and they think, oh, this is, now we're talking about computer stuff. We're making a computer word. It's complicated. But when I told my kids this, because kids have like more plastic brains, it's like, they're like, oh, it's something to do with numbers. And it's like, yeah, it's countable stuff. You can enumerate them, count them in order. And then they think that's a great word. They don't have in their minds like that's an easy word and that's a hard word. There's just all words, right? So enumerable, anything that can be enumerated, counted, can be for each'd over. Yep. So as long as the thing that's here can be looped over, I don't have to think about numbers. It'll just go over in order. Okay. So ARR in this case means array. And remember how we said before, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you name these things. But someone decided that they wanted to name it ARR, whatever, so that later when they see it, they're like, oh yeah, that's an array. They could go like this. They could go like names. I like to do it like this. Look at this. This way you're actually using, you like that
too? Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm.
Right. So you get singular and plural. Yeah. It just feels right for each name and names, display names. That's when I think, you know, nice programming kind of shines, you know what I mean? So let's put ourselves in here. Okay. So before we had said things like var something equals Scott. Mm-hmm. Here we're saying, I'm going to make a new out of nothing, a new string array. That right there made it an array. And an array is just a series of boxes. And you can say, I want 9 of something, or I want 1 of something. But if you leave it empty, you're saying, I want as many as this is. It's like an open-ended. Give me a new string array, and here's the contents. And again, everything on one line, but you see, when you open it up, it's kind of nicer to read, and you can even open it up even more. Totally up to you. Really important for folks on the chat, and I'd be interested if they're concerned about this. When you see stuff all on one line like this, I think it stresses people out. Nathan just joined. We absolutely have got all of this on the Reactor. And hopefully I'll be able to put these on my YouTube as well. So you'll be able to find these sessions in multiple places on a number of YouTubes. So we've got a new string array. When I see all of that, I got the brackets and the curlies and the commas and that, it's not that stressful if you put it on multiple lines, absorb it, and then you're like, okay, I get what's going on here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, see how we hover over name here. It's a string array, right?
Right.
This is where I think the var, and you have this, I think, you have var in TypeScript, right? You
just yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So technically, this is what's happening. But the reason that var was made was that this, seeing it twice, I think is visually confusing. String array of names equals new string array. So var in this case says, you figure it out. Mm. So yeah. There was a lot of controversy when this came out. People were like, no, you got to be explicit. You got to be specific. But I think that looks way better.
I agree. Yeah.
If we go names dot, names has stuff like count. And these are array things. These are all array things. Is this a array with a certain length? Can be the min or the max or order this array. All kinds of stuff can happen when you've got an array. And the fact that it is enumerable, it can be enumerated, means that I can for each over it. Now, let's try this. From for each. I want to just do this in two ways. I want to show you that it's the same way. Remember how we can do things like this, where we have strings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or we can go like this, which I think is cooler. Remember we did our string trick there. Works. Yeah, I keep hitting play, make sure it works. Okay, let's do the same thing as a for loop. Same exact thing. For int. Now, this can be anything, I, X, Y, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. People usually freak out about, like, what should that be?
So do you not want to use var instead, or?
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point, actually. Yeah, I could do that. I could do that, because if I have this part, yeah, it'll figure it out. Good point. And let's hover and see. It probably will. Yep, you're right. There's no reason. I guess it's just because I've always done it that way. You know, it's always been in. But yeah, that's a good point. I never thought about that.
That's because that's in, you know, JavaScript, TypeScript.
Yep. That's a great point. That's a great point. So we're going to start at zero, and we're going to go through our array of names. And I is going to go until names dot length is at the end. And then we'll go to the next number. We'll go I plus plus. And we'll open up our brace. We'll go display. And then I'll just copy this whole thing here. And we'll say not from for each, we'll say from for. And then we don't have name lying around anymore. We're in the middle of something else. I have to go and say names. Go and get me from the names at I. Right? At I. Let's see if this works. From for each. From four.
Nice.
Does the same thing. But you gotta say.
Yeah, I do, actually.
It's just easier to read.
Yeah, you're
maybe
right.
I have converted you to the for each.
You're right. This is, yeah, it's more straightforward. Less work, less type.
Yep. And here's the thing. Let's say I accidentally said less than or equal. Okay. Ah!
Yeah.
Right. This right here is a classic example, in my opinion, of where a newbie, you know, our friends maybe who are watching are going to be like, I'm a bad person. I screwed up. I made a mistake. Don't worry about all this. You worry about that another day. Even this is aggressive. That's kind of enough information. It's a little not friendly. It could be more friendly. But you had an array, and it had bound. It had a start and an end. And you went outside the bounds. You colored outside the lines. This right here where it says index, I think it'd be nice if it said I. But I is an index because we have these buckets, names at zero, names at one, names at two. So the index is going into the array and saying, give me the third one or the first one. And this is the other funny thing about programming, and C-sharp isn't unique in this respect. Have you ever heard someone say zeroth? Get me the zeroth item out of the array.
Not sure. I don't think so.
It's like the first, but it's not the first, right? Because it's got to be the zeroth item. Zeroth, first, second.
Yes,
third.
Yes.
Right. So this is a thing that also kind of confuses people that might be getting started. Names at I, the first one, is at zero.
Yes.
And that's where we get our off by one errors, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah. So Terry says, can we do an array with someone inputting data? And, you know, I think we can probably skip out here and let's go on to actually making an app. So we're going to leave our notebook for the first time and we're going to make an actual app, and we'll use Terry's question as an opportunity to actually take in some data. So for those of you who have been following along, or maybe you just joined, we went, of course, up here to .NET, Microsoft.com/learn-to-code. We got the developer tools, and we are currently working through the C# 101 notebook. I want to hear from you all in the comments here or on Twitter or anywhere in the feedback on the reactor here. Tell us if this is useful, and then we'll make a 200 level and a 300 level. We were thinking that it would be cool if we made courseware, like a whole college course, a whole university course in notebooks. And then y'all could download that and learn even more advanced stuff on your own. If you like that, let us know. If you want to get back, let's say I close this. I'm going to close all these tabs. So we're going to find ourselves kind of alone in Visual Studio wondering what to do. Okay. So if you're in Visual Studio Code right now, if you're following along, hit Control-Shift-P. Control-Shift-P, and if you type getting started, if you have our .NET coding pack installed, you'll find the .NET getting started right here. Okay? .NET getting started. And that'll get you back into this world. Okay. But what we're going to do is I'm going to close Visual Studio Code, and I'm going to open up the terminal on my computer here. Now, you might use Windows Terminal, you might use, you know, a number of different things, PowerShell, it doesn't matter, but for the simplicity's sake, people who are watching who might be following along, I'm just going to come out here and type command, and there's the thing called the command prompt, and I'm going to open up the command prompt, and that'll put you somewhere like this. I can't spend too much time here. Sharita and I don't have time to explain to y'all how to get out to the command line. So if that's a little advanced, I apologize. I'll show you another way in Visual Studio to make this easier. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to say cd change directory. I'm going to go to the root, and I'm going to type cd users. Then I know my name. Your name on your computer will be different. I'll go to my desktop. Now I'm going to make a directory. Now there's a directory here for Sharita and I. You can make your directory if you want with your Windows Explorer, and you can make your directory. You can right click and say, you know, whatever. You can say new folder, it doesn't matter. But at the command line here, Scott and Sharita, I can type .NET. Now here's a little trick. If you use that coding pack, let me show you an even quicker way to get out to that terminal. So you're in Visual Studio. There's actually a button here, a menu that says terminal. So for those of our friends that are in Visual Studio Code, say terminal, new terminal. Yours might look a little different than mine. Okay. And now I'm going to go out to that Scott and Sharita folder. So the terminal here, that command prompt that I just did over here, I can do it inside Visual Studio Code, which is pretty cool, okay? So I'm in an empty folder here, and I'm gonna say .NET new, .NET new. And these are all the things that you can make with a .NET application. I can make new tests and new Razor pages, which we'll talk about maybe in another video. And I can make React things and all kinds of stuff. I'm just gonna say .NET new console. .NET new console. Console is what we're in right now, this kind of terminal thing here. So just to be clear, I said terminal, new terminal. I say .NET new console. We'll hit enter. And I'm going to type dir for directory. And I can see suddenly what's going on here. Now I can click over here on the left in Visual Studio and I can open that folder. And we can look at that code. So Visual Studio Code now is going to open that up. You also see that there's an open folder right here. Okay. So this is different than what we've been doing before, because now we've got our program.cs in a file. We're not in a notebook anymore. We're actually looking at code the way people usually do it. You might get a notification here that says, hey, do you want to like build this? Is this, are we doing this? You can say yes. You can totally say yes. And that's going to let us be able to run this application. So we went terminal, new terminal, and we're here now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know that was probably a lot for our audience to take in at one time. And we jump right in. It's like magic that just happened. So maybe if we can make sure everyone's kind of caught up and on the same page.
So here's the deal. Great point. Thank you for the check, Sharita. So let's go back here and we made a Scott and Sharita folder. Here is our Explorer. If you're on a Mac, you'll be using the Finder. I made a folder on my desktop. I named it whatever made me happy. And I needed to create a bunch of files. I could make them all myself, but the .NET program, the .NET command line can make them for me. So I can make these files a couple of different ways. If I go out to my terminal, terminal, new terminal, and I type .NET, it'll pop up and it'll say, hey, I can do that. You know, I can do stuff. There's like help. So I can say .NET -H, and that will display help. If you want to know what version you have, you can say .NET --version. Okay. There's version 5. We're on .NET 5. But what I did is I said .NET new that we saw before. And .NET new, I'm just going to make the terminal a little bigger here, shows you all the different, let's make that a little bigger, all the different things I could make. These are templates. These are apps, basically. Look at this. I could make this Windows app. Here's, I can make a Windows Forms app. We can do one of those real quick before we're done. This can be confusing. This is where things go crazy because it's like, look, like you did React. So you might make a ASP.NET app with React. Mm-hmm. And it would probably be very familiar and not familiar at the same time because you'd see and get all the React parts, but then you'd not get all the ASP.NET parts.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly. Some people might want to do it with Angular because they like that. I wanted to make the first one because it's the simplest possible thing. Mm-hmm. And because Terry in the chat says, let's do some user input. We're going to need to speed up because I want to make sure we get all of this done. But when I did that, it created all these files. It created some folders and the C-sharp file. You can see the little icon there for us. Terry Andre makes a great point. If you want to use Visual Studio instead, I appreciate that. There's a GUI, right? A graphical user interface. So Visual Studio 2019, I can go and say create new project. This is a different Visual Studio. And I could go and pick console application. This is a great point that Terry's bringing up because it's the same thing. It's stick shift versus automatic. Mm-hmm. So here's the Terry console. Okay. And we'll set next. It's .NET 5. Hit create. It's going to chew. You know, if you can imagine your hard drive doing some stuff here, making some noise. And then it's going to bring up a very suspiciously similar looking program. Same kind of stuff. See over here? We got a bunch of files. So I chose to do it in Visual Studio Code driving stick shift. I wanted to see how it was done. Nothing wrong with that. Terry makes the great point that I just want the thing. I don't care where it goes, whatever. We'll worry about that later. Let's get me going quicker. He wants to drive automatic. This is the difference between the code editor that is Visual Studio Code and the integrated development environment, the IDE. It's got more bells and whistles, right? It's a great point. But when you say make a new thing here in Visual Studio, it's just doing the same thing. It's just hiding it from us.
Yep.
I think is cool. Good point. Thank you for reminding me not to go too fast, Rita. So I'm going to open that up, programs.cs. Remember at the very beginning of day one, I was like, ignore all that. And we were like, yeah, we're going to make us ignore all that. We've been in notebooks. We've been chilling doing this. Here's a bunch of stuff that we have to think about. And we don't have too much time because we can show folks the advanced classes and places that they can learn these things. But all this time, you and I have been saying system.console.writeline, and we didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that we didn't have to keep saying system over and over and over again is because we said we're using system. We're using system. We can use all kinds of systems. We can use all kinds of stuff, right? So that's a shorthand that means I don't have to say system all the time. Okay. That's what that's for. System is a namespace. It's a space to make room for names. And the name that Microsoft picked was system. We can make our own namespace. So this thing that we're doing here, this class that we named program, we can call it whatever we want, my program. This is actually Scott and Sharita dot my program. Remember all those dots that we were doing? This dot, this dot, this. And this is the dot main function. My namespace, my program, and my function. So if someone were to gonna use Scott and Sharita, they'd say using Scott and Sharita, and they'd use our thing. So that's the relationship between this and this. Right? So we named it, doesn't matter. This part here is the one magic thing that you just have to accept. It's an entry point. I don't actually know how this works in TypeScript. I don't think really anybody knows, right? Somewhere it's buried. When you run a TypeScript program, you said you do React?
Yes. Yep.
You run TSC or what do you run?
TSX.
TSX. Okay. So that has to go and jump into your TypeScript program and find an entry point. It's got to start. Where's the front door? I mean, do you have to name it main or does it just run anything? Magic.
I don't know. It's getting deep in there.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't worry about it. So here, a C-sharp program has to have a method called main. That's because it is. It's the entry point. A house has a front door. The way that we know our front door is here, it's called main. And it can take an array. We can pass in input. Doesn't have to. We can get rid of that if we want to. It doesn't return anything. It doesn't return a Boolean. It just returns nothing. And the void is nothing. The world, the space is a void and it's filled with nothing. So if you're returning nothing, you return void. You could return an integer, like a yes or a no or whatever, but we're going to return nothing. And then static is going to be a little bit outside the scope of what we're doing here. But static means, you know, unmoving, unchanging. Static technically means I don't need to make a new my program in order to call this. It's just there all the time without anyone having to make one. So we have a namespace. We named our own. We named our program, our class. And then we made a front door. And all of that was hidden from us. All of that was hidden from us back over in notebook land. Here now, I can click on the little play button with the bug to run or debug my application. So if we hit the play button, and there's a thing up here that says .NET Core launch, we're going to launch this. We're going to hit play. It's going to go and run the app. I'm going to do a bunch of scary things here. And let's see where it said hello. There it is. See all this stuff? I think React, TypeScript, this is just programming. They tell you a bunch of stuff. Here's the actual program output. So we said hello world. So if we say hello friends, hit play again. Chew, chew, chew. Think. Hello, friends. Aaron's asking if static is like a lambda function in Python. That's a pretty advanced question. You can make a lambda. You can make a function. You can make an anonymous function, and you can pass functions around. We've been passing variables around. You can make lambdas and pass them around. Static is saying, I don't need to make a new my program in order to call main. I can just call main directly. It's... I'm trying to think about the Python equivalent. In a strongly typed language, it's a little more complicated. But chat me on Twitter, and I'll get you an example of this in Python. Cool. So here we said, hello, friends. And each time I hit play, it compiles it, turns it into a program, and then spits it out. Now, Inbar is asking what the difference is between console.writeline and display. That's a great question. This is a great question. So display that we saw before was a helper function, a helper function. So there was a display method that we couldn't see that took a string and it called console.writeline for us. And all it did was it did that so we wouldn't have to do that, right? Then we were, it was going to go and say display to just try to make things easier. Oops. See if this is going to get mad here. And I see I was going to give me an error here, right? Not all code paths return. Actually, this doesn't need to return a, oops, there we go. So I made a function called display. So now my application does the same thing. It still says, hello, friends. Instead of me saying console.writeline, I said display. This function here, this helper function, look at this. Look at this here. You see how there's like a little arrow here?
Yes.
I do this psychologically in big, long applications when they stress me out. Because it's like, I can't deal with whatever's going on.
Yeah, I recently started using that more.
Really? It's nice. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can't right now. So this is the I can't even button, right? Now, Jay Brennan is saying, can you hide all of that to the output is more visible? That is part of how Visual Studio Code is doing things. And I could get into the details of how it launches. If you go into here, there's a thing called launch.json that describes how it's going to go and launch this. And I believe there's a way to go and say, tell me less. Mm-hmm. Tell me less. The way that I do it when I'm doing this kind of work is I go out to the terminal myself. See, I go out to the terminal myself and I type .NET run. .NET run. Remember how we said .NET new to make one of these? I just said mm-hmm. .NET run in there. I don't have to output anything. So to Jay's point, you can do that. So I can just leave the terminal down here. We can just keep doing that. So now our original question, Terry was saying, how do we get input? We've been saying console.writeline. I bet you we can readline. Okay. String user input equals console.readline. Display user input. That looks pretty clean.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, like that. Yep. Let's see if that works, right? So now I'm going to say .NET run again. I'm down here at the in the terminal. I'm going to say .NET run. Oops. So yeah, this is a good one. What do we think we forgot to do, my friends?
Save.
Yep. Thank you. Sharita got it. This little dot right here is saying you got to save. It's a dirty flag. It says, this is dirty. I need to hit save. So I'm going to go file, save, or I'll just press control S. So yeah, you could hit auto save and it would just save automatically if you want to. So I'll just have to hit save. Good catch. .NET run. What's happening? It's just waiting.
It's thinking.
It's thinking. But it's waiting for me to type anything.
Because why is it the last black? Oh, I wait for the little cursor to flash.
Yeah, you would wait for the cursor to flash, but I actually changed my cursor to not flash.
Oh, okay.
Right? But this is a great example where, let me go ahead and stop this. I probably should say something like, what's your name?
Yeah.
Right? Then do the read line and then keep going.
Okay? Yeah.
So I'll hit save. Yes. What's your name?
Nice.
And Sharita. Enter. Huh?
Hello.
Look at that. Now we're cooking with gas. Cool. So at this point, if I wanted to, I'm going to try a little thing here because I think Terry made the point about Visual Studio 2019 having a GUI. So I'm going to take all of this code. I'm going to hit Control A. Control A is select all. And then Control C. So I'm literally just saying select all. And then I'm saying copy. So now it's in my clipboard. Okay. Switch back over to Visual Studio, the Terry console. I'm going to Control A. And I'm going to paste. So now we're over in another program, another app. We're using the IDE here. And now I can run my app like this. So let's hit that button. And it's going to start to build my app. Here it is. Enter. And then it's done. So that's a different way to do that debug experience. In this case, it popped up a window here. It popped up this window. And it that window jumped out of here. Okay. Now one thing that you can do in both Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code that we haven't talked too much about, but as we get towards the end here, we'll send people to some other videos, is you can do what's called a breakpoint. You can click over here in the what's called the gutter, this line along the side here. You can click in the gutter in the margins, and it makes a little red dot there. I can also, if I want, say breakpoint, I can insert a breakpoint. There's a hotkey for it. And a breakpoint means stop here. I don't know how often TypeScript people do this kind of stuff, interactive debugging. It's more of a C#.
Oh, no, we use it all the time.
Do you really?
And in the developer tools. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So some people, I won't make any generalizations, different languages, they are more like outputting console.log got here. Mm-hmm. Got here. Other people do interactive debugging. It's a cultural decision. Doesn't matter. But having interactive debugging is a really nice thing that you can do. So I'm going to say stop. We'll stop on line 11. We'll run this app. Hey, I'm debugging. Enter. The app stops. It freezes. And we are now stuck. See the little arrow. We're stuck on line 11. And just like we were hovering the mouse over these variables, I can see I'm debugging. And check this out. See the little pin?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever clicks the little pin. It's a little post-it note. And you can leave yourself notes. This should be the variable I use or whatever. And you can keep these little notes around. And then if you open this up, sometimes those strings have like other data in it. And I might want to look at it like it's JavaScript, or I might want to look at it HTML. So now I can see that variable change. So then I can continue on my way. I'm going to hit continue up here. All right, let's do that again. Hit play. What's your name? Reactor. Enter. See how it just turned red? It changed to Reactor. And put the breakpoint here. We'll do it all over again. This is the thing that's great about debugging. You want to just do it and try it, do it and try it. So look at this. Right now, before I enter my name, it's null. It's nothing. Yeah. What's your name? Fred. Okay. So that experience, that debug, make a change, debug, make a change. You want to just find out what works for you.
Yeah.
So like using Visual Studio, you can download that at visualstudio.com/free. And you can get the Mac version. You can get the Windows version. They're all free. Or you can get the Visual Studio Code, which runs on Linux or anything. I like to kind of bounce between them. If you go to .net.microsoft.com/learn-to-code, that's where you get the coding pack. That gives you Visual Studio Code and .net, because they're two separate installs, and interactive notebooks and the starter notebook. That's what we were doing. Last thing I want to show, because this is where I think things get really interesting. If you, you know, want to get into coding, you go to like File, New Project here in Visual Studio. And maybe we can go and make a Windows app. You can make Android apps. You can make Windows Forms app. You can do all kinds of stuff. We'll make a different kind of app. C Sharp is great because it can do really any of these things. Windows Forms is a kind of an older style that people like to use. WPF is a thing. React, to your point, is a web technology that folks can use. That is pretty cool. So we're going to create this just really quick, a Hello World Windows app here as we get to the end. And it's making a form over here. Make this application pop up. Come on, computer. I think my computer is working pretty hard today, doing a lot, doing the most. Come on, computer, people are watching. There we go. Let's run this. I think it's going to pop up on one of my other monitors. So there you go. May not see that. Yep, here it is. And now it's over here. So now I have a form. And I could put a button and a chart and a graph and a whatever on it, right? That's cool. So that's using also C Sharp. Last thing I could do, just to show you how many things that you can do with C Sharp. Out at the command line again, instead of saying .NET new console, I can say .NET new web, or like to your point, .NET new React, and then .NET run. This is going to make not a console app, not a Windows app, but it's going to make a web app. And now it's listening on a web page. So I can go to my computer and I can say, hello world. And now I'm in my browser. So C Sharp is letting me do all these things, which is super cool. And if you go and take a look at the .NET web page, you can make web apps, Android apps, iOS apps, desktop apps. You can make games. A lot of Xbox games are written in C Sharp, which is super cool. But if you click on Learn, we've got this series. Not the series we're in right now, the .NET 101 video series. Check this out. We've got 19 parts on how to use C Sharp. We've got our friends talking about doing more complicated things like APIs. Sweeki here, she talks about using a Raspberry Pi, like a little tiny computer in C Sharp, which is cool. You want an introduction to Visual Studio? Kendra will go through that. We're always updating these things. Visual Studio for Mac, making games, lots and lots of resources available to folks. And you can also, if you want, do an in-browser tutorial. And then if you go to Microsoft Learn, you can go in here and you can see the different products. You can talk about what your, you know, what you do and what your job is. And one of the products is .NET. So here we can also learn C Sharp in the browser, kind of like using notebooks, except we do it in the browser. So many ways to learn. Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, the education pack. Want to make sure that everybody has fun. So yeah, maybe we'll see you another time and you can show us how to do React, which you know, in C Sharp, which you're getting better at.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, cool.
Thank you all.
Thanks so much. Thank you everybody in the chat, and hang out with us and check out these links. Follow us all on Twitter as well.
And I dropped some messages in the chat for the Microsoft Reactor calendar, our YouTube. So if you missed any of the session or you want to revisit any information, do check out the Microsoft Reactor channel. Thank you all. Take care now.
Thank you.
See you at the next one. Bye.